From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Those of you in the Central and Eastern time zones, Happy New Year. I'll wish you, those in the Mountain and the Pacific time zone, a Happy New Year as well, especially those of you in Hawaii in about 4 hours. Later tonight, our prediction show, as we review past and present predictions. And we'll have some open lines as well. First of all, I want to thank Sunset Hills, Missouri police officer Chris Medlock tonight. He was right on the scene. Let me tell you what happened. 2 o'clock this afternoon, I get a sobbing phone call from my granddaughter, Ari. She's been in a huge car accident. Somebody ran her off the road on the expressway getting off on an interstate. And it was very snowy conditions. Her car started to dovetail. She went down an embankment, up a hill, landed on a post. She's okay, thank God. Car very damaged. But she was off in this obscure area calling me, just sobbing. But Officer Chris Medlock from the Sunset Hills, Missouri Police Department, first on the scene, got there, calmed her down, comforted her down, worked out everything. We got the car towed away, and all is well. But thanks again, Chris. Appreciate everything you did. And he's a fan of the show. How about that? Congress blowing past the deadline for averting the historic tax hikes as the ball dropped and Americans rang in 2013, but lawmakers were making seemingly steady progress now toward a deal that could contain the damage in the days ahead. Senate leaders were trying to tee up a vote in the early morning hours after the White House and Senate Republican negotiators apparently reached a late-night deal on the fiscal crisis going over the fiscal cliff. Craig Smith, of course, an expert in many forms of tangible assets with us. Craig, so tell me about the deal. What do you think?
Well, George, I mentioned this on Fox on Friday. I don't like the deal, I think. And by the way, I apologize for the way I sound. I'm fighting a bit of the flu. And
well,
thank
okay.
God your granddaughter is okay. I know what that call feels like. I had that happen with my children years ago. We know this much about the deal. People making under $400,000 a year as an individual, $450 as a couple, are not going to have to worry about anything. People above that, they're going to go from 35% to 39.6% in their tax rates. The estate tax looks like it's survived up to $5 million for an individual, $10 million for family estates. After that, it's taxed at 40% versus the 35%. It's also going to extend the jobless benefits for long-term unemployed for 1 year. And the cuts will be 50% defense and 50% non-defense, George. But technically, we've gone over the cliff, and I see nothing in this deal that cuts any type of spending. It talks about it, but it doesn't do it. And I want to quote John Boehner, because he said something that's very critical. We'll listen closely to what he said. The House will honor its commitment to consider the Senate agreement if it is passed. He did not say they would agree to it, George. They said they would consider it. So we are over the cliff. This is not a done deal yet, and Congress still has the ability to kill this bill in Congress. So we're over the cliff, George, and I don't think the markets are telling us anything that we don't know. The markets were up 168 points today. They're taking this in stride. But I'm pretty confident that come Wednesday, we're going to have a heck of a battle on our hands in D.C.
I think so, too, Greg, and thank you. You have a good new year, and thanks for the information. President Barack Obama has signed into law a 5-year extension of the U.S. government's authority to monitor the overseas activity of suspected foreign spies and terrorists. The warrantless intercept program would have expired at the end of 2012 without the president's approval. The renewal bill won final passage in the Senate. An unknown illness suspected of being a norovirus has sickened 194 passengers and 11 crew members aboard the luxury cruise ship Queen Mary II. Now, earlier in the week, 189 passengers and 31 crew members on the Emerald Princess came down with the same symptoms. The symptoms are those of norovirus, a contagious microorganism that can be acquired from an infected person, contaminated food or water, or by simply touching contaminated surfaces. Norovirus causes an inflammation of the stomach or intestines. And What they're saying now, it's hitting hard this year in Britain so far this season. More than a million people are thought to have suffered this violent vomiting that it brings. In the United States, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that norovirus causes 22 million illnesses a year. Of those who get the virus, 70,000 require hospitalization. Another 800 people die each year. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has been admitted to hospital in New York with a blood clot. Clinton suffered a concussion earlier this month after fainting and falling down. At that time, she was reported to have had a stomach virus and to have passed out after becoming dehydrated. She's 65 years old, due to stand down as Secretary of State before U.S. President Barack Obama officially begins his second term in January. Well, what's going on in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what's the latest out there?
Well, thank you very much for having me on, George, on this important night. And I would like to echo what your last guest said about your granddaughter's welfare. Thank heavens
Thank you, Peter.
She came through it well. That would have been a horrible way for you and your family to start the year 2013. But I just got home 2.5 hours ago after 9 days on the road. And I have been swamped since I got home. In the last 2.5 hours, George, I have taken reports of these strange red-orange fireballs from Fort Myers, Florida, Chilton County, Alabama. I think the party said Vernita Springs, Florida. A report of orange lights from Charlotte, North Carolina. A similar report from Boise, Idaho, and we just took a yet another report from Miami, Florida. So we're starting off 2013 with a bang. This year, I want to figure out what these orange orbs are.
Okay, well, what do we think? Plasma balls or something else?
Well, I'm 99.9% sure that not all of these reports are of so-called sky lanterns or Chinese lanterns, but whether we can determine what they are definitively and positively depends on the witnesses and what reports people submit to the National UFO Reporting Center. I would request that if people see these things, please sit down and submit a written report, and we will feed that back to coast, and hopefully we will be able to come up with an answer for what these very, very strange things are. In one case, people saw 13 of them at one time tonight. And I'm anticipating after this program, we're probably going to get another half dozen or dozen reports from across the United States. I have no idea what these things are, George.
Peter, by the way, I want to thank you for the years of service you've provided, not only to Coast, but the UFO community. Well, I know you do a lot of this from your own pocket, and I want to give out your website, which is UFOCenter.com. UFOCenter.com. You know, if everybody would just... Peter does this all out of his own pocket, folks. If everybody could just send him a dollar, every listener, a dollar, he could keep the National UFO Reporting Center going for a long, long time. Peter, you have a great new year, my friend, and we thank the world of you. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Facebook. Well, they made a major mistake these days, didn't they? They have what is called Facebook's Midnight Delivery app. They allow users to schedule private messages to wish friends a very happy new year. Well, apparently they made a mistake and they sent the messages out to everybody. Everybody could see private messages. It's great to be able to social network, but boy, when it goes down and makes a mistake, look out. In a moment, Lauren Weinstein joins us. We're going to talk with him about the internet next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, Lauren Weinstein with us this hour. We're going to talk about the internet. We're going to talk about social networking. We'll take your calls in a moment. Lauren Weinstein, of course, has been involved with the development of the internet for decades. We turn to him on all internet-related stories. And Lauren, I wanted to have you on as we kick off the new year. This weekend, I was told by so many people about parties and things. And you know how they invited everybody? They invited them through social networking. It's truly unbelievable. One group of party people, they put on parties in St. Louis, said they've never had a bigger attendance. And, you know, in the old days, they'd send emails and things like that. Now it's all social networking. Is it really that big?
Yeah, it is that big, and it has some interesting implications, too, because you were just talking about another one of Facebook's famous problems. And there's a lot of people who will say that, boy, they'd really like to shake off Facebook and stop using Facebook, but if they feel like if they did, they'd lose contact with their family, and they wouldn't get invitations and things like that. So what's happened is that these kinds of systems, and Facebook in particular, have become for many people a kind of easy kind of shortcut way to invite people. You know, you don't have to call them and get in a conversation. You don't have to write them a letter. You know, you just kind of plaster it on your Facebook page, and then you assume they'll either see it or they won't. So on one hand, it could be viewed as good because you have a way to greet people and invite them to these things. On the other hand, if you don't want to participate that way, if you don't want to be sort of a Facebook slave, you can end up feeling like you're out in the cold and have lost touch with your loved ones. So that's a real double-edged sword there.
Sure, well, it sure is. Well, it is fascinating how it works and how it's growing all kinds of other things as well, Lauren. Business applications, letting people know. Like, you know, we talked some months ago about GM pulling their ads from Facebook because they weren't buying cards. But is there some marketing strength there with Facebook? I mean, I don't know, and I've never bought it. I've never bought a product on Facebook. I have bought a lot on the internet, online, but I've never bought one on Facebook. Do people buy things or just look at them?
Oh, that's a very interesting question, because Facebook has a model that isn't necessarily ideal for marketing. It's not like you're searching for something and then an ad pops up for the thing you searched for. Facebook is more based on presenting you with ads sort of while you're in other kinds of conversations. And there's a point of view that says that's really not the most effective way to do advertising. You don't, you know, when you're chatting with a friend, that may not be the best context to try to do ads. And Facebook has been very, very aggressive about the way they do advertising. And this has spilled over to things like Instagram. You probably were following the Instagram blow up recently, which was Instagram was purchased.
About private pictures or something, right?
Well, that's actually something else. Facebook now. So many different things are happening at once. There's so many balls in the air. Facebook bought Instagram, and they changed Instagram changed its terms of service.
What is Instagram for people who don't know?
Instagram is a way to take photos and to apply, you know, filters to them, like old time filters and different kinds of special effects, and then to share them.
Okay.
And it's very, very popular.
It's like Photoshop, but you share it, right?
Though it's more of a one click kind of thing. You don't have to, you know, go through the degrees of expertise that it takes usually to get up to speed with Photoshop. But they changed the terms of service in a way that just kind of blew up in their face. They said we're going to be able to insert ads, and you won't necessarily know that they're ads. They implied that they could take your photos and put them on ads without your permission. It just exploded around the internet. So right after that happened, they backed off and they said, "Well, we're going to you misunderstood. We didn't put this right. Here's what we really meant." And then shortly after that, they came out again and said, "You know what? Just forget everything we said. We're going back to our old terms of service." So that was sort of another misstep by Facebook. Now the other thing you just mentioned about instant pictures, that's a service that is a way to send a message with a photo attached or not that supposedly will only be visible to the recipient for a short period of time, and, you know, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever, and then it's supposed to disappear. And this is supposed to be used for all kinds of applications, but in general, this kind of thing tends to be viewed as a way for kids to sext to each other, you know, to send photos like that on the theory that the person at the end or other end won't be able to capture it, post it somewhere, and then embarrass, you know, the other person for the rest of their lives in some way. In practice, though, you can always capture these things. I mean, they supposedly try to detect if you do a screen grab, but obviously if you just had a cell phone camera and you aimed it at your terminal screen, you know, you'd be able to capture it that way. And so that's another area that, you know, in fact, there's other services that are sort of like this. And there are whole sites devoted to all the photos that have been permanently saved that were supposed to be ephemeral and to have disappeared automatically. So all kinds of stuff going on.
Lorne, what is the technology that's fueling this? Was, you know, could we say it was the computer? Is it the smartphone? What's doing it?
It's a complex of things, of course. You have the pure speed of computers now. In many ways, if you actually look at the software that's running these things behind the scenes, much of it hasn't changed very much in a lot of fundamental ways. But the machines are so much faster now. There's so much more memory and so much more capability that it seems as if there's been major shifts. So you have very fast computers, tremendous amounts of disk space and solid state memory space increasingly now available. So you can basically afford to save everything, which is both good and bad. And of course, communications. You have the very fast, very capable, and increasingly fast backbone internet systems that can interconnect all these systems. And this leads to what I think is going to be one of the big issues for 2013 and onward, which is trying to keep those lines of communications open, because the open internet and issues of censorship and government surveillance and government crackdowns and things like that around the world, takedown orders, Google had like 50 million takedown orders in 2012.
Now, what's a takedown order?
That is when someone who claims to own some sort of content orders Google to remove search results. Google doesn't actually have the content, but they have the search results. So they order them to actually do that. And that increased, apparently, by a factor of 10 in the last 6 months. So this is a real, if you want to talk about that more, this is an area that is just exploding. So we are facing a situation where we're having all this incredibly capable, incredibly powerful technology, but the dominant ISPs, the big ISPs, and world governments, and we just got past the UN ITU basically attempting to take over internet governance in a significant way. It got fought back, but it was pretty scary there for a while. And having all these different groups basically trying to close down the open internet, saying we want to control it. This is going to be a very big fight going forward.
Now, with all this technology, I want you to look into your crystal ball for a minute here, Lorne. What do you see over the next 3 years? What's going to be out there that is just phenomenal? I mean, because the smartphones 3 years ago weren't as powerful and weren't as widespread as they are today. So what's out there next?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there. Mobile is probably going to be a lot of the focus now in its various guises. We've already seen not just smartphones but tablets of various kinds. They're really starting to eat into PC sales. And there's people that say, well, the PC is dead and such. That's not true. If you're doing serious work, if you're creating content, you tend to need a real desktop PC, and obviously
right.
Businesses do also. But if you're mainly a reader of content and looking at images and looking at videos and things like that, a tablet can be extremely convenient, especially when there's basically ubiquitous Wi-Fi access in many parts of the world now. And that is a game changer. As these devices have gotten so incredibly fast and incredibly capable, this whole mobile sector is going to be where the growth is going to be. Oddly enough, though, it still isn't really clear what the best way to do advertising is for mobile devices, because you are dealing with smaller screens, especially with phones, much smaller screens. And people do not have the same kind of tolerance for advertising on a small screen that they might on a PC. This is one of Facebook's major problems. And one of the things that I think has been a downward pressure on their stock has been they have said, and it's true, that they have not really figured out how to advertise effectively for mobile. And they know that mobile is going to be where all the growth is coming in the next few years and onward.
They have to learn how to monetize mobile.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really has the secret sauce for that yet. It's very tricky.
Well, we're going to come back with you in just a moment. Lorne Weinstein, our special guest this hour. His website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. your questions, and also just give me your comments on social networking and tell me if you're on it and how it's working for you, how it may have changed your life for the good or for the bad. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your calls in just a moment with Lauren Weinstein as we talk about social networking and the internet. Love to get your comments on that. And welcome back to Coast, Lauren Weinstein with us this hour. Your phone calls, Lauren. Here we are in the Midwest, of course, 38 minutes ago. We hit midnight 2013, but I did get some messages from folks who said, it seems that text messaging has slowed down. Can that be overloaded?
It can, certainly. There's a limited capacity, but the capacity is pretty high. It's interesting that overall, I think this 2012 was the first year since text messaging was introduced that the total number of I'm pretty sure that this is correct or very close to these numbers. It was the first time that text messaging actually saw an absolute decline in total number of texts that were sent. And the reason is that people are finally cluing into the fact that text messages are one of the least flexible and in many cases most expensive ways to text. Mm-hmm. So when you have a smartphone and you have all these other options to send messages, people are starting to migrate in that direction. Of course, that'll take pressure off the text messaging networks themselves.
Okay, let's go to some of the calls. Let's go to Montreal. John is with us. Welcome to Coast. Hey, John, go ahead.
Good morning. And from your neighbors to the Great White North, we'd like to extend a happy new year, a prosperous and healthy new year to all our neighbors to the south in the U.S.
And your wonderful neighbors to the north, let me tell you.
I know. Now, I have a comment and I have a question. My first question is to your guest, how much of an influence does the internet have on these individuals that are going around and shooting people?
Okay.
And my comment is, well, it's actually a question. Which do Americans fear more, a terrorist or outside attack or their own government?
All right, both interesting questions. Lauren, let me take the second one, and you can handle the internet and what it might do to someone's psyche and whether they are forced into shooting or not. You know what? I think people are concerned about everything. I think they're concerned about outside terrorism from abroad, and they're concerned about in-home terrorism here. In cases that happened in Connecticut, the tragedy, I would not put that in the category of terrorism by any means. What that was a very sick young individual, and it was a very sad story for everyone involved. Simple as that. But I think overall, we're concerned about crime. We're concerned about just about everything right now. Lauren, what about the internet and shooting?
Yeah, I haven't seen any evidence to suggest in any of the horrible mass shootings that have occurred, you know, at any time in the recent past of any notable internet connection at all. Usually what you're dealing with is people that have had all kinds of mental problems, social problems that in retrospect may be obvious but aren't necessarily obvious, you know, on before the event. Often problems, you know, when they're young people, often problems with schoolmates or relatives and things like that. I just haven't seen that. Now, of course, the internet tends to be used in a forensic sense after these events to try to figure out if people were looking at particular kinds of sites and things. That's probably why there was a lot of concern in the Newtown case when it turned out that apparently the shooter took considerable effort, apparently, to destroy the hard drive of his computer.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard any about them being able to pull any data out of that. But usually what you find is that, you know, people are confused and just sick, basically. And, you know, whether you want to call these shooters mentally ill, whether you want to call them evil, whether you want to try to draw some, you know, intersection between the two, I think this is largely independent of the internet in a causative sense. At least I have not. You know, I watch for this kind of thing, and I haven't seen any evidence that the internet's been involved that way.
You know, Lauren, when we were kids, and all of us, you know, played cops and robbers, cowboys and Indians. We ran around with cap guns. We did all these things as kids. Not one of us turned out to be a criminal, to hurt someone, any violent crimes or anything like that. Where's the common denominator today that has caused some of these kids to go into this arena? I think it's the prescribed drugs.
There's so many things that are different now than we were kids. I mean, we also watched a lot of pretty violent cartoons. They weren't realistic, you know, as realistic, but certainly we saw Wile E. Coyote destroyed in about, you know, 500 different ways.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And a lot of people use you know, a lot of kids watch very violent video games, and most kids are just fine. They don't go out and kill people. I think that there are differences. Certainly, there is a whole different way that kids are treated now when they're considered to be unusual or aren't learning fast enough or too fidgety. The desire to immediately start medicating them, it seems kind of scary. And I don't think that enough is really known personally. This is getting outside my area of expertise. You know, I'm just looking, this is a concerned observer. But I would think that when you're medicating, you know, young children with powerful drugs, you really need to understand what's going on. And I don't think that's really fully understood. The other thing, of course, is there's a lot of pressures now on kids that weren't on us, especially when it comes to testing, standardized testing, clearly, they're trying to grow up much faster now, and I think that has effects on kids' psyches, and I think if you combine all these things together, along with the other factors, I think that might explain why we're seeing more of this. But of course, there's experts who are out there, and they charge big fees, and they don't seem to understand it either.
Let's go to Garrett, Wildcard Line in Columbia, South Carolina, for his question. Go ahead, Garrett.
Hey. Just wanted to make a comment. Happy New Year, George.
You too.
I like social networking, actually. Just able to, you know, keep in touch with my family on Facebook and everything. And, you know, they're in different states or different countries. And it's pretty neat that you can just send a message instantly overseas and that they get it, you know, right away.
Oh, it is amazing. It really is.
Yeah, I think it's just great. So I'm actually all for the social networking on the computer.
And you know what I've noticed, Lauren, that you go into a restaurant or any place, everybody's got their smartphone, their cell phone with them. Guys primarily are holding it. Women will keep it in their purses. But, man, when they sit down, everybody pulls them out or puts them on the table. I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
It's not just restaurants. I mean, just about every waiting area I have seen in the last couple of years. But I think what's happened is that not just social networking per se, but the advances in mobile technology have kind of tapped into a very basic human desire to communicate. I mean, fundamentally, it's all communication, right? So I think it's just unleashed that, and it's a very powerful inducement to be able to be anywhere and to be in contact. Obviously, some people take this a little bit too far when they're walking down the street, you know, walking into a lamppost or something.
which does happen. I use it a lot for contacting my producers and the marketing people on coast to coast. It's a business thing for me. But I did an experiment, Lauren. I left it at home for a few hours.
Uh-oh.
And I got to tell you, I kind of felt lost. I didn't know how I would feel, but it was a strange feeling. And how many people have left the house? You've gotten into your car, you've driven away, you forgot your phone. You feel as if you're going to miss something important.
There's also been some very interesting structural changes in the way people communicate. At least in my experience, what I've seen is you get a lot fewer spontaneous phone calls now, because it's almost considered impolite in a way in some relationships to call someone without sending them an email first or a text first and saying, would you want to talk to me at 2:00 or something like that?
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of become a little impersonal.
You know, so when your phone, so sort of the phone ringing has become sort of a higher alert status, and more and more people are just sort of depending on email and texting for their routine communications. I don't think all of this was really predictable many years ago.
Well, you know, within 10 minutes, you can probably text 10 people, but you cannot talk to 10 people on the phone in that time period. You'd get nothing done.
Right. Right, and in fact, you can get to a lot more than 10 people. I mean, and the spammers depend on that too, right?
Right.
In 10 minutes, they can get to probably a couple hundred thousand people or more. Well, one thing I was going to say though that struck a chord. Your caller was saying how neat it was to be able to communicate overseas. I remember the first time I did that back in the early 70s on the ARPANET. And the first time I realized I was typing to somebody who was at an Air Force base, I think in Norway, which was one of the first non-U.S. sites that was reachable. And I just thought it was so neat to be able to sit there, and there's some Air Force guy in Norway sitting at a teletype or something, and I'm typing back and forth with him. And I did not have the ability to picture that down the line it would grow into what it is now. It didn't seem possible with the technology we had then. So the taste of it was there, sort of the sense of wonder was there, but the fact that it has blossomed into what it is now is something entirely beyond what most of us could have imagined.
I truly see the day where people will vote on their smartphone.
That is a real problematic area. And that's something I'm hoping does not come very soon, any kind of internet voting. And this is an area that I've done work in. And
I agree, but I think it's going to happen, don't you?
Some countries are moving in that direction, but the problem is there is really no mechanism that exists now, and you could talk to basically any computer scientist who's worked in this area, to meet the requirements of a hacker-proof system that is anonymous, verifiable, and meets all the other requirements you want for voting. And the simple way to understand that is just think about what happens when viruses get into your PC.
That's right.
Imagine a virus that got into your PC, hid away in there until election day, and then changed your votes invisibly.
Well, yeah, if they're not doing it already.
Well, in fact, in the countries that have gone in this direction, they can't really prove that it's not happening, because if you do it right, there's no trail to prove that the hacking went on.
That's true. Jonathan, Miami Gardens, Florida, on the wild card line. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, John.
Here's to you guys.
Thank you.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Yes, my thing is, that guy that shot all of the kids, last week, a couple of weeks ago,
yep.
And the other guy that shot that Senate, that lady shot her in the head, the astronaut's wife.
Congressman.
I was thinking, my friend told me before he committed suicide, we Baker Act him twice, and he said that when asking why did he try to commit suicide, my friend, he basically said that he was listening to the emergency broadcast system one day, and he basically was hearing voices from the television. And it was always telling them to kill yourself. Nobody believed him. And he said he's clean now, but he still is confined because he has psychological problems. But he says the television told him to kill himself. And that's not the only person that had got Baker Act at that same institution that he was in, so that complained about that same emergency broadcast.
Well, let me tell you about that, Jonathan, first of all. And Lauren, you know, there are those conspiratorial people who actually believe that government or some agency might be using television or radio to subliminally send things to people like the Manchurian candidate. I mean, they believe that. It's an interesting possibility. But by and large, I think people who are hearing these direct voices like that might be possessed, you know, demonically, or there's physically something wrong, mentally something wrong.
Yeah, because the hearing voices, of course, has been basically through recorded history been associated, you know, at least in many cases with schizophrenia. And when the appropriate, you know, medications are used, often the voices go away. That's not to say that's the only reason people hear voices, but that does seem to be the reason in a lot of cases. I don't know of a technical mechanism. And I know these systems pretty well for example, in television and radio, how you could get useful subliminal messages through. I don't claim to understand everything, but over the years that I've studied it, I can't figure out how it could be done, so I'm less concerned about that.
Let's go to Dennis in Buffalo, New York, first-time caller. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Happy New Year.
You too, Denny.
You're having a great show tonight. You touched on a whole bunch of different subjects, especially that last part. But what I wanted to say is that when it comes to the mobile devices, because this is something I study, I got about 15 Microsoft books here in my certification. And the way I see Microsoft going, because they're the software makers, is with the mobile devices. And he's absolutely right. It's telephone, it's tablets, it's iPods, and it's your laptop. But here's the catch. They're getting ready. They have already put a marker on how many devices you can connect to anything. All right? And each one of those devices costs enormous amounts of money. I mean, a tablet, hundreds of dollars, almost $1,000 for a decent laptop. The service to each of those. This is an enormous amount of money. And what I fear the most is that they're going to cut it off or make you pay higher prices for connecting all those different devices.
Uh-huh. Well, they probably try to maximize it as much as they can, Lauren, won't they?
Well, in fact, this is the whole area of concern relating to network neutrality, really. This is where this starts to come into play, because the dominant ISPs, the big boys, have been merging and combining, and part of what they do at that point is they start to apply bandwidth caps, which is another way of looking at this. So you can only send so much data before you're charged additional fees, or they want to split the data up into different channels. So if you pay them extra, you get good performance. If you don't pay them extra, you get something quite a bit less. And unfortunately, they've really been getting away with this. And at one time, we thought we'd be able to push back on this, but it's actually getting worse rather than better, even though there's more bandwidth available. The upshot of that is just as the caller was saying. It's not so much how many devices you can connect, but how expensive it is to actually communicate from those devices on any given mobile plan. And it's also affecting wireline, conventional non-mobile plans also. So unless we start getting some real competition in this country like they have in most of the rest of the world for the big ISPs, mobile and non-mobile, we are going to be paying a lot more, and it's going to be a situation where, I mean, right now, let me put it this way, right now in the U.S., we pay more for lower speed internet than almost any other developed country in the world. You can go to South Korea, you can go to Japan, people have fiber optic connections everywhere, mm-hmm. They cost half as much as what we pay. And it's because they have either, government helping to build these systems, or they have a lot of competition, or both. And here, we have neither of those things. So we have just a few very large companies that basically have us in their grip.
Lauren, bring in the new year tomorrow and have a great moment, okay?
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to your listeners. So glad to hear your granddaughter's okay. You hear things like that, and it kind of puts all our other issues into perspective.
It sure does. Thanks a lot. You too, Lauren. Appreciate it. I'll be back in a moment as we begin our predictions program, so get ready to make your phone call. Plus, we will have open lines tonight as well, so don't feel as if you just have to make a prediction. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.